Our next case this morning is Sierra Club against the EPA.
May it please the court, my name is Doug Williams, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Sierra Club. I'd like to begin with a statement that this court made the last time we came before it involving a matter involving the ozone problem in St. Louis. And here's what this court said. It is not a court's business or EPA's business to rewrite a statute so that it will better reflect common sense. Only Congress can do that. So the statute in question here involves the requirement that must be met pursuant to Section 107(d)(3)(e) of the Clean Air Act for an area to be redesignated from a non-attainment ozone area to an attainment area. Three of those requirements are really an issue in this case. The one I'd like to focus on initially here is the fifth requirement. The state has met all applicable requirements for the area. So the obvious question here is, what's applicable to the area? St. Louis...
We agree that there's no statutory definition of the phrase applicable requirements.
There is no statutory definition of what constitutes an applicable requirement for purposes of this section of the...
And doesn't it sensibly mean whatever requirements the EPA thinks are sensible?
No, I don't think it means that. The statute doesn't say applicable as determined by the administrator or what the administrator determines to be useful or appropriate. It makes a reference to...
You finish.
The applicable requirements that must be met are those set forth in Section 110 of the Act, which are the General State Implementation Plan requirements, and Part D of the Clean Air Act. Part D has two subparts, one, general non-attainment provisions, and subpart two, which are specific to particular pollutants, including ozone. And if you look at the specific provisions relating to ozone non-attainment areas, you'll find that areas are classified under that section according to various criteria. Here, St. Louis is classified at the time of this rulemaking and pursuant to an order of this court as a serious ozone non-attainment area. And if you look at the provisions in subpart 2 of Part D, the first sentence says, the state shall submit revisions to the applicable implementation plan, including the plan items described under this section. It makes no exception to that clear statutory command. And if you look at the plan items that are required...
Let me tell you what seems to me the problem. Maybe I'm not understanding your position correctly. But it sounds to me like what you're saying is that in order to be certified as in attainment, St. Louis or any other city has to have the implementation plan appropriate to what they were when they were a non-attainment area. So that the applicable plan is always what you were last rather than what you are in light of the current readings.
I think that's correct, yeah. But I don't think that's what I'm saying. I think that's what Congress said.
Why would that be so? Why isn't the applicable plan a plan applicable to a place like the one you now are in light of the test results?
Well, there is provision made for a new plan upon redesignation. That's the so-called maintenance plan.
Forgive me now.
Sure, Judge.
Is it your position that an area may not apply for redesignation during the time period when a new SIP is due and not yet approved? Or maybe is it that they can apply, but the EPA should automatically reject the application?
First of all, you know, the due dates here are expressed not in terms of actual submission dates. They're phrased in terms as no later than. So a state may submit one of these SIP plans at any time it has it ready to go. Yes, but in answer to your question specifically, yes, that's our answer. A state who has not met the requirements applicable to the area cannot be redesignated.
Now, where is the statutory authority for that limitation?
Well, I think it's a combination of 107D3E5. The state has met all applicable requirements to the area set forth in Section 110 and D. And then if you go to subpart D, it says, without exception, the state shall submit the revision. And when you get to the plan items, there are exceptions made to some of the plan requirements depending on air quality conditions.
And yet the EPA seems to be arguing, or is arguing, that you haven't shown that the attainment demonstration would serve any purpose not better addressed by Section 107D3E.
That's the provision relating to a requirement to show that the approved measures actually led to attainment.
Right.
I think it does serve a purpose. One is, as I mentioned, EPA's interpretation of the statute is not limited to redesignation requests, and that's clear by its reliance on the Tenth Circuit's decision, which was not a redesignation case. That case involved a determination by EPA that the state there would not be required to make certain plan submissions because it had obtained the ozone standard. The state had at that point not yet requested redesignation. So when the requirement of attainment demonstration shows is that there are federally enforceable measures in place that will yield the desired outcome. I should also mention that one of the things that takes the harshness, if you will, off of this sort of suggestion is that Congress well understood that there may be occasions when the requirements that set forth in subpart D might be more than necessary to reach the ozone standard. And for that reason, it didn't make these requirements permanently applicable to the state. Upon seeking redesignation, a state is given the opportunity to submit a so-called maintenance plan. That maintenance plan may exclude previously implemented control measures. What Congress said, though, is if you do have more in place than is necessary to attain the ozone standard, you move them to the contingency provisions of the maintenance plan, and they become automatically implemented upon a violation. So Congress clearly understood, I think it's obvious on the face of the statute, that Congress understood that in some circumstances, the applicable requirements of subpart D would be more than necessary.
About the contingency measures, the EPA contends that you waived your argument as to whether or not, you know, the measures are adequate by not raising the issue in the public comments during the rulemaking, and you didn't.
If I'm correct, this addresses this specific time limit for implementing them. There is a statement that I quoted in our brief, and admittedly, I think our comments on this are subject to, EPA's interpretation, but clearly, EPA understood them to mean that we were objecting that there was no specific time limit. In the rulemaking itself, it specifically addressed this. So the whole purpose of waiver, to avoid unfair surprise or bring issues for the first time on appeal, simply aren't applicable here. EPA addressed the matter, and indeed, its brief is extensive on this. And I don't think there's any ambiguity in Missouri's contingency plan. It doesn't commit to implementing any measures within a specific time frame. It says it's, as soon as practicable or some language to that effect. I would like to go back I sort of lost my thought. I would like to go back to where we were immediately prior to this, having to do with these implementation plan requirements. The first thing I think that gets us off on the wrong start, or gets ETA on the wrong start, is suggesting that you know, this term applicable infuses this whole statute with ambiguity. I think if we look at the American trucking case, the Supreme Court was very cautious about that sort of argument. And I think if you look at this case in American trucking, they bear an awfully close resemblance. That case involves EPA's efforts to decide how to implement a new ozone standard, the new 8-hour protective standard. And the EPA said, well, none of the subpart 2 requirements apply. And the court said, well, there might be some ambiguity in which one should apply, but certainly you can't excise whole portions of the statute. Well, I think that's precisely what EPA is doing here. It is simply saying, we don't think it makes any sense to require attainment demonstrations, reasonable further progress plans, or a host of other requirements once an area has monitored attainment. Well, Congress could have said that. Congress could have easily said, these requirements will not be applicable on a showing by the state that the ozone standard has been attained. And it seems to me that if Congress intended that sort of result, it surely would have said so. I mean, such a fundamental proposition. And it does provide exceptions to various plan requirements to account for various air quality conditions. So I think, you know, the statute is plain in the relevant respects.
You know, you seemed to concede in your reply brief that we would have to split from the Fifth and the D.C. Circuit in their 2002 Sierra.
Only in respect of one particular plan item, and that's the plan item under subpart D. Part 1, the general non-attainment provisions that require states to implement reasonably available control measures. There, the D.C. Circuit held that EPA's construction of that term to require only measures that actually advance attainment should be considered reasonably available control measures.
So you are urging upon us a circuit split as to that.
Indeed we are on that. Mm-hmm. We don't think that's a reasonable interpretation of the term, and part of the reason has to do with EPA's own conclusions about which requirements do remain applicable. It insists that certain measures required by the general provisions of subpart D and the specific non-attainment provisions of subpart 2 remain applicable. The vehicle and inspection maintenance program and the so-called reasonably available control technology requirement for various categories of sources. It says those remain applicable even if the area has attained the ozone standard. Which, by the way, undercuts the force of their common sense argument, saying that why should we require control requirements if they're not necessary for attainment? Well, it's doing precisely that in retaining these. And if you look at the language of those particular provisions, to me there is nothing there that distinguishes those provisions from the provisions that EPA says are no longer applicable. The language Congress used there is virtually the same. The state shall submit a plan that includes each of those elements, and it set time limits. The basis for distinguishing these RAC requirements and the vehicle and inspection and maintenance program requirements from the other control measures specified in the statute is not at all obvious to me, and I don't think EPA has really given an adequate justification for selectively choosing some items and excising others. The other major provision in this redesignation request has to do with the maintenance plan provisions themselves. The maintenance plan, we think, is faulty for a couple of reasons, one of which we've explored here. Its failure to commit to any specific time. This is only the Missouri portion of of the plan. It's failure to commit to any specific implementation schedule. The other one has to do how the state proves up that the plan it's offering to EPA will adequately ensure maintenance of the ozone standard. The statute says any SIP revision submitted by a multi-state ozone non-attainment area must use photochemical grid modeling in support of that SIP submission, or a technique deemed equivalent by EPA. And the crux of the dispute here has to do with whether EPA has made a determination that the method here used by Missouri and Illinois to show that their maintenance plan will indeed maintain the standard is an equivalent technique. It's our position that EPA's own internal guidance shows that it's not. I see
once
that
prospective, the modeling plan is prospective looking.
Well, the purpose of the modeling is to sort of run the control measures that are in the maintenance plan through the model, which generates the outcomes in terms of ozone concentrations, as a predictive measure of whether those measures, the control measures, will actually ensure that the standard is met, in this case for a period of 10 years. That's what the maintenance plan requirement is. So you put in your inputs, you run the model, and if it shows no violations, your plan is fine. And that's one way of doing it. What they did in this particular case is the contrary approach. They just counted up emissions levels and said if they don't get any higher, then we'll maintain the standard. You see, I've reserved some time here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Williams. Ms. McDonough.
Excuse me. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eileen McDonough. I'm here from the Justice Department on behalf of EPA. With me at council table is Robert Patrick from EPA Region 7, which is responsible for St. Louis area, and also Timothy Dugan of the Missouri State Attorney General. The states who were allowed to intervene in this action have ceded their time to me, so I'll be presenting argument on behalf of all the respondents. But if the court has any specific questions for Missouri, I would defer to Mr. Dugan.
Ms. McDonough, I have a question for the states and the EPA, because you all seem to have found a nifty way to completely eviscerate our opinion in Sierra Club. And I'm wondering why Congress would have set up all these extra requirements for serious areas that the state could avoid them by seeking redesignation once it achieved attainment.
Well, with respect to the suggestion that this was done to avoid the consequence of the court's prior decision, as is made clear in our brief and in the rulemaking notices, all of the positions or all of the interpretations applied by EPA are of long standing. They were first set forth as guidance in the general preamble, which was in 1992. They have been applied in a number of rulemakings going back into the 90s, which are cited in the preamble, and also certain the aspects of those policies that have been litigated have been upheld by the circuit courts considering them. So given this historic background, I don't think there is any basis to suggest that this approach was developed in response to the court's very recent decision.
Now, do I sound paranoid to you?
Well,
but why don't you plead guilty? It seems to me that what everybody wants is to have the nifty way of avoiding being a severe non-attainment area is to become an attainment area by actually cleaning up. And people who actually clean up ought to get rewarded.
Our position is that
that's evasion. It also seems to be a big success.
That's our position, is that St. Louis represents a successful implementation of Title I of the Act. They have, through the measures adopted by the state, achieved the one-hour NAAQS standard. And
well, through that and driving industry away and a variety of other objectives.
Well, those are different aspects of the Clean Air Act, but in order to do redesignation, EPA has to find that it was the result of the SIP measures and the other federal laws and regulations, and EPA made that
finding.
Which
cleaned up northern Indiana in a very effective way. Steel is now made abroad.
Sometimes you have a law of unintended consequences, but EPA is limited to the consequences in the statute.
You know, I guess what you're arguing is that there's no point in requiring the continuation of stringent measures for areas that have achieved attainment, but then what about maintenance? Doesn't your interpretation of redesignation thwart the congressional intent on maintenance?
Respectfully,
when that word comes up.
Yeah.
No, we don't see it.
It's always well to avoid this respectfully business. It suggests, if you weren't a judge, I'd be calling you a jerk.
No, I mean, we don't see it.
A paranoid jerk.
As interfering with the congressional mandate. When you're looking at the reclassification provisions, those are designed to deal with areas that are not in attainment, and you're ratcheting up the control measures with increasing degree of severity so that they will attain the next. Now, in this case, there is somewhat of an intersection, coincidentally, between reclassification and redesignation because of the fact that St. Louis attained the next at the point in time they did. Their clean data was shown through 2000 and 2002.
What designation do you believe applied to the St. Louis area at the time it sought redesignation? In other words, was it attainment? Was it non-attainment? Was it unclassifiable?
But when the redesignation request came in, it was clearly a non-attainment area. The only step that can transform that status is the completion of full redesignation procedure required under Section 107D. And to get back to the issue about the maintenance plan, one of the reasons that EPA determined that the applicable requirements include only those that were due as of the date of the redesignation submission is because those are the measures that achieved the 1 hour ozone standard. They were, in effect, future measures not yet implemented had no impact on achieving the necessary reductions. Therefore, when you're looking at the maintenance plan, you're really looking at the same set of measures that achieved the reductions necessary to reach the next, and then EPA is evaluating to determine whether the state has also shown that the measures are going to maintain this achievement of the next for 10 years out. And EPA here made that decision. The question of the classification that's appropriate really comes back to the fundamental issue of the term in 107D of the, quote, applicable requirements. Now, EPA's position is that there is no statutory definition of that term, and so the agency under Chevron Step 2 is entitled to give it a reasonable construction. Now, what EPA has done is construed available to mean the SIP requirements due at the time of the redesignation request and to exclude SIP requirements that the statute ties or links to attainment of the standard.
To exclude what requirements?
Those elements of a SIP that are specifically linked.
I think you would find that it's a lot easier to talk to us generalists the fewer acronyms you use.
I'm sorry.
I mean the implementation plan, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
That those requirements relate to attaining the NAC. The fundamental reason for that being that the purpose of these statutory provisions has been attained. The NAAQS have been reached, or the ozone standards have
assuming,
been reached.
Assuming the area isn't growing, or other things aren't happening.
The possibility of future growth is assessed in the context of the maintenance plan, where that is a fact, growth is a factor to be considered in projecting the 10 years.
In the maintenance plan?
Yes, because they have to cover it for 10 years. Now, I'll focus just as an example on the requirement for the attainment demonstration. The attainment demonstration, which is required under Section 182, is specifically described by the statute as a plan with the measures necessary to attain the standard by the applicable by the statutory attainment date. In the case of an area that has already attained, this plan would be an empty set because they don't need any additional measures to make attainment. They've done it with what they have to date. The only utility that Sierra Club attributes to requiring an additional attainment demonstration is that it would show that the attainment was reached through the SIP requirements and other elements of the Clean Air Act. In the case of a redesignation, however, this is already covered by the requirement under 107 that EPA finds that the standards were attained through the Clean Air Act and SIP measures. So in this context, that argument is simply would require a redundancy. And Congress has made a very specific provision in the redesignation statute, and so that is the one that should be applied in this regulatory context.
Let me just kind of explain my problem. After this court ordered the EPA to reclassify St. Louis as a serious area, the EPA and the state found a way to thwart the effect of that ruling by immediately seeking redesignation. And bottom line, it just seems so odd that Congress would set these stringent requirements for serious areas, especially the maintenance requirements, and then allow them to be ignored if a state reaches attainment and requests redesignation. And I mean, you know, I'm fully cognizant of your argument, but that's still plaguing me.
What the difference there first is, in this context, you have to consider both the redesignation statute and the 182, the Section 182 requirements, which were the exclusive statute addressed in the prior case.
Yeah.
And those address only areas that have not attained the NAAQS. At no point does Congress in Section 182 address what happens once the NAAQS have been attained and the area is eligible for redesignation. Now, the fact that the redesignation happened to be submitted in the same time frame as this court's prior decision is driven by the 3-year period in which St. Louis actually attained the standards. If they had not attained the standards during that period or prior to the date for the serious area SIP submissions, then they would have had to make those submissions and would not be eligible for redesignation until EPA has approved the serious SIP requirements. So the difference in many respects is one of timing, and it's not purely a legal administrative timing because the redesignation timing is fundamentally based on what is shown by the historic data. When, at what point do they hit that 3 years without a violation and so cross over into eligibility for redesignation?
Well, then why didn't you simply deny the request for redesignation until the new SIP was due and fully approved?
That is based on EPA's interpretation of the applicable requirements under Section 107D.
So you have them coming and going.
Because there was the coincidental event of the 3 years of clean historic data. And this is the same statutory approach that was upheld by the Sixth Circuit in Wall. And again, we believe that it's reasonable when you have this intersection of both redesignation and reclassification. Now, see, my yellow light is on. Does the court have any further questions?
There aren't any lights on.
Is it really on?
You're not required to continue talking.
If it's on, I just failed my eye test. Oh, it looks like it's on.
No, there are no lights on.
Oh, it's not on. I'm sorry. I'm just losing my eye.
There's no legal requirement.
I'm glad to hear that. I do believe that most of the other points are fully covered in our brief. And the one thing, again, that I do want to emphasize, there is nothing in these rulemakings that was developed specifically for St. Louis. They are longstanding. They go back to the agency's initial response to the Clean Air Act amendments in 1990, where certain portions have been subject to petition for review. EPA has prevailed. In order to accept Sierra Club's arguments here, the court would have to split from the Sixth Circuit on one element, and then the D.C. Circuit and the Fifth Circuit on the second element. And we believe that such a split in circuits is unwarranted based on the record before the court. So if there's nothing else, I will retire.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonough. Anything further, Mr. Williams?
Thank you. I'd like to make just one basic point. And in Ms. McDonough's presentation, she said this. She said the non-attainment provisions address only areas that have not attained the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. That is incorrect. It addresses areas that have been classified as non-attainment areas. There is no classification under the statute corresponding to non-attainment areas that have attained the NAC. There's no legal significance.
Non-attainment areas that have attained what?
The National Ambient Air Quality Standard. Excuse
please,
me for the acronym.
No acronyms.
No more. The point that I want to make here is that attaining the National Ambient Air Quality Standards has no legal significance in the statute Congress wrote, except as being a required element for redesignation from non-attainment to attainment. Congress easily could have said, if you attain the standard prior to these SIP requirements becoming due, you don't have to comply with them. Or it could have said there's a classification available for areas who were designated a particular way, but you know, defying the expectations of the Congress who wrote this statute, they attained the standard without implementing the required measures that would otherwise apply. You can get relief. In this respect, this case resembles precisely the case that was previously before this court. Their EPA tried to create a new non-statutory category to relieve states of control obligations set forth in the statute. This court said, no, you can't do that. The statute says if you're a non-attainment area, you have to do X, Y, and Z. Here, EPA is effectively doing the very same thing. There is now a new classification under the statute, which can't be found in the statute, that you might call non-attainment areas that have attained the ambient air quality standards. And for EPA, that decisively determines what the control requirements for that area are. It seems to me, again, that if Congress intended such a result, it would have said so. It didn't. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.